Hey, 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 Kevin Guthrie here, talking all things mental health. So I have Sam Kendall in the studio with me today. Welcome, Sam.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for being here. I'm going to start off, as always, with our listener question. So somebody wrote in and asked what mental health was, which I thought was a great question because we might assume we know what it is, but not necessarily. You know, for me, mental health is very, very much the same as physical health. If we viewed it in the same way as we do physical health, it would be far, far more acceptable and accessible. Mental health is exactly the same as physical health in terms of it can be really good or not so good. But remember that we all have mental health. This isn't exclusive to people that have mental health problems. Everybody has mental health, okay? The same as physical health. Sam,
yeah.
How would you answer that question?
Pretty much hit the nail on the head. Physical health, you can always see it,
yep.
Which makes it easy for people to see. Someone's got a broken leg, oh, well, I'll open the door for them. It's much more okay to have a physical problem, whereas mental health problems aren't always visible. But again, you said mental health. Everyone has mental health.
Yeah.
It's just at what scale, what part of the scale are we on?
Yeah.
Are we in really good mental health at the moment, or are we in poor mental health? And it's dealing with that again, isn't always visible.
Absolutely. We are here today to talk about Suicide Prevention Day, which is the 10th of September. Sam, just tell people your background. Who are you and why are you here today?
Okay, so my background is frontline ambulance service. I was based out at Sleaford in the East Midlands Ambulances for around 7 years. Before doing that, I used to actually answer the 999 calls,
yeah.
Which I always found a lot more hard dealing with them over the phone because your imagination goes, whereas dealing with them face-to-face was a lot easier sometimes. Yeah. On leaving the ambulance service, I set up my own training business, so I teach physical first aid and now mental health first aid training.
Okay.
I go around doing a lot of keynote speaking at events as well and networking events.
Yep. Cool. 10th of September, what does that day mean to you?
Okay, so 10th September is World Suicide Prevention Day. Since 2003, that started.
Okay.
What happens on World Suicide Prevention Day is all across the world, organisations, communities, all come together to try and raise awareness of how we can create a world where fewer people die by suicide.
Okay. It's a subject that we kind of struggle to talk about, isn't it? We're not, it's so deep and so heavy that a lot of people avoid talking about it, but would you agree that it's really, really important that we talk more openly about it?
Definitely. Going back into statistics, the latest statistics we have is from 2017,
yeah.
Where just under 5,500 people in the UK took their own lives, which is just over 15 people a day. In comparison, if you imagine every year with a road traffic accident, you think, well, that's quite a lot.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, in 2017, only 1,770 people died in a road traffic accident.
Wow.
So in comparison, we've got a huge problem. Yet there's how many systems are in place to slow the speed down and speed cameras and everything to do with that. What are we doing for that? But like you say, it's people are scared to talk about it. It's not a subject that you chat about over dinner, is it? Suicide.
No. It's just such a serious place. It's one of those things that I always think, whilst ever it's sat in the darkness, it will happen and people will just do it.
Yeah.
But whilst ever we're talking about it, though, there's less chance that people will actually carry it out.
Definitely. I think these past 2 years, I think mental health in general has been the topic of everywhere. Workplaces are jumping on it. The HSE are finally saying, yes, you know, mental health is as important as physical health, which is amazing. All your big organisations are running out training now for people. We still obviously have the problem, as we know, with men and their rate of suicide. Yeah. You know, we're a good 75% of that 5,500 are men. But I would like to point out that in 2017 was the lowest rate in 30 years of the men's statistic. So we are obviously doing something right. I think we need to look at that and be positive about that rather than dwell on, oh my gosh, it's 5,500 people, where actually we're coming down in men.
It's good. Am I right in thinking that although the whole thing dropped slightly in 2017, so the figure did drop in general?
Yes. Yeah. There's always questions on why is it higher in men?
Yeah.
And I think that's quite a good question to ask even your listeners, to say, right, why do you think men? My personal view is stigma. I think there's a huge stigma about a man having ill mental health.
Yeah.
You know, a man having depression, panic attacks, anxiety, any of those mental health problems.
Yeah.
As we know, men in general don't chat like women do.
Yeah.
You know, I'll quite happily chat with someone in the supermarket, you know, oh my God, I'm so stressed. But how easy is it to talk about how stressed we are?
Yeah.
Yet when we're talking about depression and suicide, we don't. We're not as open as we should be. And I think that's the problem we have with men.
Yeah.
But that is what's changing. And I've seen that firsthand. Men do come to me and talk a lot more openly about it. I just think men are now talking.
They're getting better.
They are. However, one note I did note was in Scotland, their statistics, 3 years in the row up to 2017, their figures for men taking their own lives has been increasing.
Yeah.
So what are we doing different?
I think coming from this is completely personal, coming from a Scottish background, I'm Scottish parents, Scottish brothers, I immediately wonder whether that's cultural.
Yeah.
They're just, again, there's that. Do they have the ability to talk? Mm. I completely agree with what you said then in terms of women.
We talk too much.
I'm going to be slated for saying this, but please take it in the way that's intended. Women talk more than men. They just do. It's just more acceptable.
Definitely.
So therefore, whilst ever you are talking, you're getting stuff off your chest. Mm. Whereas a man's not, and he's building it up. I deliver mental health into business, and I deliver into RWE, the big power station here in Newark. And when I first went in there, I was really quite nervous. And if anybody's listening to this, you'll know now, I was a little bit nervous a couple of years ago because I thought I'm going to have a group full of men there sat with their arms folded going, what is he now?
Yeah.
But I tell you what, that first session, we nearly ended up in group therapy. And I was like, I have to pull this back because they were brilliant. They were talking. But I think that, again, is a cultural thing. Their director or their kind of plant manager at the time was well on board. He was in there and he was like, no, we're going to talk. We're going to discuss. I don't want you on the shop floor fighting. I want you in here talking to each other. But honest to God, they were brilliant. They were so good. And for the last 2 years have continued to be brilliant.
Yeah.
So it's shifting.
Definitely.
Thankfully.
Yes. And which is shown in the statistics. It'll be interesting to see next year, what, say, 2018, 19. Statistics bring.
Yeah.
Let's hope it does keep falling. But over 15 people a day is still way, way too many.
Yeah.
But I think now you speak to people, somebody knows somebody.
Yeah.
You know, that's either got severe mental health problems or that has, you know, taken their own life. And that's really scary.
It's a really interesting thing with suicide in that I don't find that it runs in families per se, but it can affect families, and I do. I've seen it time and time again in therapy where somebody has been affected by suicide in their past, so somehow it becomes more normal, more acceptable for them to do.
Yeah,
it feels like it's on their radar, so to speak. So mum committed suicide, dad did, brother did, and then all of a sudden it's on their radar, so it makes it, oh well, I'll just do that.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, that's not what we do just because that happened in the past. Have you ever heard of epigenetics?
Yeah.
So epigenetics is we can end up with markers on our genetic makeup due to past trauma.
Yes.
They always use the Holocaust as a really good example, but I would look at the war and other traumas. But if a person has been through significant trauma, they can end up with what I call a marker or a shadow on their genetics that will then affect them. So it hasn't directly affected them, but it's come from their history. And I always think that's really interesting, particularly when we look at suicide. Whether there are markers there that kind of...
Well, there's huge study, isn't there, in pregnant ladies. You know, what experiences they've gone through has a knock-on effect directly to that child's future and may not present itself until they're, you know, in their 20s.
Yeah, particularly in terms of traumatic births.
Definitely, yeah.
So they... If I understand it correctly, they look at the last trimester. That's the most prevalent area, and also birth can be so a traumatic birth can be. When you think about that rationally, why would it not be? That baby is being born and fighting for its life in that moment. And a lot of people say, "Well, it's a baby. They don't." I'm like, "No, they're being marked. They're being programmed from that. Breathe. You've got to survive this. From those very basic." Caveman kind of instincts that
Definitely.
We have.
Definitely. And if, say, the parents have been in a stressful situation relationship-wise, will have an effect on that child without them even knowing it.
Completely.
Yeah,
Completely.
And then you introduce drugs and alcohol, which we know is a humongous contributing factor to ill mental health and suicide. Most men are intoxicated when they have taken their own life.
Yeah.
And I think that's another thing as well, going back to saying why do men do it more, I think... Men do it more and actually manage to complete it because of the means and the way that they do it compared to women. It's a more of a traumatic way of ending their life, which means it's going to happen. The figure that we have, studies show that a good 10 to 25 times that number try to take their own life, which is a staggering number. And that's one of my big bugbears, is people that say, oh, so-and-so, you know, she tried to commit suicide. Well, did she fail at it? You know, don't say she tried and failed at it, because that's no good. But also, other people will say, oh, it's a cry for help. Yeah, it is a cry for help, and we need to do something. We don't need to belittle them and say that they're just trying to, you know, get attention or something. It's actually, no, they do need attention, they do need help, so let's talk to them. Why? Why are you at this stage?
Yeah.
And let's try and prevent it.
What would you say to somebody or somebody that was listening... that was around somebody they feared was thinking about taking their lives or hurting themselves in some way?
It's just ask them.
Yeah.
Talk to them. It's the big thing I'm trying to push at the moment is that it is okay to be not to be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is okay for that. And it's okay to ask somebody if they are thinking about taking their own life.
Yeah.
You're not going to put the idea in their head. The problem we have as a society, how many times do you walk past someone that you know and it's like, oh, morning, you all right? You don't give a damn about what is going to be said back to you because you're halfway down the road still.
Yeah.
We need to stop and we need to listen to people. And if you think someone is in that situation, make the time to be with them. You know, all distractions away, phones away, and be just you and them and actually listen to what they're telling you.
Yeah.
And if they say, yes, I have been thinking about taking my own life, then we need to start going, okay, do you have a plan in place? How are you going to do this? And do you have the means to do it? If they don't have the means and they haven't got the plan yet, hopefully we can listen more and signpost them to GPs, therapists and other people. But if they do have the means and a plan, you don't want to be leaving them. And I would always suggest they ring 999 and get someone to come in and take over looking after them.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. As a therapist, I would ask the question, I guess I would ask the question quite gently by asking how dark their thoughts were.
Yeah.
If I got a sense their thoughts were dark, I'd say, how dark are your thoughts? And I'd go, what do you mean?
Mm.
Well, you know, are you thinking of doing anything? Are you thinking of hurting yourself in some way? So I always start with, are you thinking of hurting yourself? Because sometimes they might bang their head against a wall, or they might scratch their leg, or they might take to a blade, or and I check it out on that line. So what's the worst place you've been to? And they might say, well, I did think about ending it. It's really interesting that some people would go, I don't want to die, but I don't want to be here.
Yeah,
that I get that an awful lot.
Yeah.
And I go, I know, I understand it. I completely understand what you're saying, that it all feels too much. In this moment, it's just too much, and I'm like, I'm out, I'm done, get me out of here.
And I think a lot of the people that do take their own life haven't been planning it for weeks and months. It is off the cuff, kind of, I've had enough.
Yeah.
when I was 20, I was in a really bad place. I, as a whim, reaction, was driving down the road, and I had just had enough, couldn't see through my own tears, you know, really bad, that I took my hands off the wheel and put my hands on my head and just went, I just want to end it. But within a few seconds, you realise, what on earth are you doing? Yeah. And you see sense. But whereas if you've been stood on the edge of a bridge, you know, there's no going back from that one.
Yeah.
And I watched an amazing video, and I use it in my training, of the Golden Bridge.
Somebody told me a story about this.
Did they?
Might be the same story.
Ah, maybe, that there was this young guy on the edge, and he ran, and he put his hand on the bar and leapt over. And he was one of the very, very few survivors, because once you go over that bridge, there's no coming back. But he survived. And his only powerful memory he has of that is the second his hands left the bridge was regret.
He's done, yeah.
I don't want to do this. And that in itself was an attempt at suicide, and that still now, 20 odd years on, has a huge effect on him and his whole family. So it's even attempted suicides have equal effect as completed suicides.
Yeah, completely. I think there's a club. There's a club in San Francisco of survivors. People,
is there?
People that didn't.
Yeah.
People that went to do it but then didn't.
I think there's only about 17 survivors out of hundreds.
Yeah, maybe I'm thinking it's not survivors, but it's people that went to the bridge to do it and then decided not to or decided they didn't want to go forward with it. But yeah, I can't remember who it was that was telling me that story. But it's such a fine that way. Kind of doing that leap is such a finite way of doing it.
It is.
You take the jump. British Rail had a brilliant campaign on not so long back, and it was, I'm sure they run it on TV, and what they're encouraging people to do was talk to people at a train station.
Yes, yes.
Did you see it?
They're trying to do that now, actually. I was talking to a lady who works at the railway station in Lincoln, and she said that they're trying to get that in. Just, you know, if someone stood on the edge of a platform, let's go and just say, are you all right?
Yeah.
You might be the only person that spoke to them that day. I even teach my children, when you're walking down the street, especially an older person, just smile to them. Because that's connection. We don't connect with each other.
No.
We live in our own little bubbles, and we don't speak and communicate. So how on earth are we going to know if even our best friend is struggling?
And interestingly, as humans, we are biologically wired for human connection.
Yeah.
It's how we grow. It's how we kind of connect with people, but we become very insular. Why do you think that happens? Why do you think we become very insular as humans?
I just think we're so hung up on our own life, our own problems. Everyone's, I don't know, everyone thinks that they're more important than anything else at the minute.
Yeah.
And we're so, everyone thinks our life is so fast paced. It doesn't have to be.
No.
You know, when you go on
slow
holiday,
down.
You love it.
Yeah.
I'm back to reality when I come back home. It's life, and what we do are choices.
Yeah.
If you work every hour of the day, that's your choice to do that. Yes, we have to work to earn money, but it's our choice on a lot of things, and that's where we need to look at things, I think.
Yeah.
And actually take a step back and go, do I want, when I retire, to look back at my life and go, wow, that was a bit of a blur? Or do you want to have, I've got some amazing friends, I've got brilliant family.
And memories.
Not how many likes have I got on Facebook.
Yeah.
And that's really sad. And social media has a huge impact as well on suicide and mental ill health and self-harm especially.
Because
the amount of sites out there are unreal.
Do you think there's, with suicide, there has been a trend? I was thinking about what you said then about sites. Do you think, let me change the question, do you think it's been glorified in some ways?
Now, I remember in my last couple of years on the ambulances, there was a thing about suicide packs that was hitting the social media.
Okay.
So I do know firsthand that we had, in the East Midlands especially, a big spell of people getting together, a couple of people in a car, and they were able to get this recipe, if you like, to the point where you could go online and print off a sign that you can put in your car window to say, this is what we've done at this time. So then the fire crew, the ambulance crew know not to open that door because they don't want to hurt anybody else. they just wanted to end it. But the fact that there was websites that you can go to and do it with somebody else.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know, now I'm not on the ambulances, if we still have that problem.
And see, that's completely different to one person being alone and wanting to take their own lives.
Yeah.
That is a completely, it's just an entirely different level.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
A very lonely one.
Yeah.
So many people are quick at saying it's selfish.
Yeah.
That is the one thing that boils my blood.
Yeah.
They are not being selfish. Yeah. They are not thinking about anything about themselves. It's about life will be better without me. My family will be better off without me. At no point have they ever thought me.
Yeah. Whenever I work with people that are in that space, they're not... Their minds become so irrational.
Yeah.
So that there is... hardly any rational mind to access whatsoever. It's just, well, you know, everybody else will be better and yada, yada, yada. They're not considering the trauma that might be caused or anything like that. It's just, they'll be gone, so therefore it'll be... They don't look at the devastation that's being left behind whatsoever.
I think we ask ourselves, and we should ask ourselves this, in our life, regards suicidal thoughts... We don't always think of it as a suicidal thought because we're not going to act upon it.
Yeah.
But how many times in your life have you ever gone, God, you know, they'd be better off without me? Or, you know, and we have these off-the-cuff remarks again.
Yeah.
So, you know, everyone has these little thoughts, but it's when we start acting upon them that we need to help them. And I think giving someone hope is the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
Even in our normal days, if you... plodding along and it's a bit of a, you know, the same thing day in, day out. When you have that holiday booked, life seems so much brighter.
Yeah.
Having that light at the end of the tunnel, and I think someone that's in such a low place, and you'll do this as a therapist, is giving them the hope of recovery.
Yeah.
That there is something after this. And also giving the help and support to the families. And that's what coming back to the Suicidal Prevention Day is about. It's about raising awareness and also helping those that have been affected by it, because it's not just the person that found them.
No.
It's not just the family or friends. It's the person down the street that heard it on the radio, or the person that read it on social media.
Yeah.
It's the ambulance crew, the police, you know, everybody.
It's like a ripple effect.
Massively.
Isn't it?
Yeah. But it gets people talking about it again.
Yeah.
The hardest thing, I think, with mental ill health is we're very good at hiding our feelings. We all put a smile on our face, don't we, and just get on with things. You know, how are you? Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
Good at that.
Yeah, I mean, what did we say a couple of years ago when we heard the horrid news of Robin Williams taking his own life? Everyone said the same thing, but he was so happy.
Yeah.
What a happy man.
On
but yet outside. You look back at the videos of him doing interviews and you can see a troubled person.
Yeah. But we look past it. We look past it really easy. And like you say, we are very, very good at putting on a brave face. And that was, you know, that was a phrase that was used, oh, for goodness sake, just get over it, get on
with
it.
Pull your socks up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man up a bit. That one always got me.
Oh, can't bear that. Oh, grow a pair.
Yeah, grow a pair. That's a good one, that one.
Can't bear those phrases.
But those are far and few now. I don't often hear those said. Normally it's like, what's wrong?
Yeah.
But the key thing of how we can help people is having that time to listen.
Yeah.
And I saw actually on social media, it was like a little cartoon strip, and it was this one person there and someone else saying to them, I'm really struggling at the minute.
Yeah.
And this other person was thinking, what do I say? I don't know what to say. So they didn't say anything at that time. And the other person was opening up, telling them all their problems. And this other person's going, I need to say something. I've got no idea what to say. And then the other guy said, thank you so much for listening.
Yeah.
They don't need a response. They just need someone to listen to them.
Just be there at the side of them and just be with them.
Yeah.
Don't try and be clever. Don't try and be big.
No.
Just be at the side. Make a cup of tea.
Yeah.
Sit and have a cup of tea in silence.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
And allow those silences.
Yeah.
And I know when I teach my training is then to encourage and ask them, what is it you're thinking?
Yeah.
You know, they're obviously thinking something. What are you thinking? Nice open questions to them. And again, don't butt in with some of your wonderful advice.
Yeah.
You know, because that's going to be absolutely pointless to them.
Yeah. We're not... Sometimes in therapy, I'll ask people where their heads are at, what their inner voices are saying. And, you know, they might say to me, what do you mean by my inner voices? Like the inner voices in your head.
Mm.
the little voice in the I'm not crazy.
The inner dialogue that goes on, yeah.
And I'm like, no, we all have inner dialogue. We all have it. And they're like, really? And I'm like, everybody has inner dialogue. Now, I'm just wondering what's going off in your head at the minute. How does it sound? What radio station is it playing? Is it detrimental? Is it happy? Where is it at? And then they go, oh, so you get the voices as well. And I go, yeah. As I'm sat here now asking you questions, I have a little voice that's going, what did you ask that question for? That was a stupid question. Why did you go there? But I'm aware of it, so I can go quiet and busy. We have to be aware of it. Again, pull it out of the darkness. And once we pull those voices out of the darkness, then we can hear them. Mm. And I encourage people to write them down sometimes. Write them on a piece of paper, and then you can see them.
Yeah.
And that's really powerful.
Oh, to visualise your problems.
Yeah.
And then to go through them one by one. Because when we have so many problems, it's the straw that breaks the camel's back, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, that last thing could be anything tiny. Your child that morning refused to put his socks on.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. Off you go, explosions everywhere, and you lose it because of everything else that's gone on. You write them down. A lot of people do that at night, don't they, before they go to sleep.
Yeah.
I know my mind buzzes at night time. Oh, I need to do this email. I need to do that. Write it down. I don't need to waste my time thinking of it anymore.
It's out of your head.
Absolutely. And I think that's a powerful tool. And that's the thing that we try and get across to people is we're not teaching them to be therapists. We have people like you that are good at that. We are just here to listen and then go, I think you need to talk to someone and go with them.
Yeah.
You know, be the person to go with them. But be also then be mindful of your own mental health.
Yeah.
Because that's going to draw you down and going to cause you problems. So you may then have to talk about it.
So when you teach mental health first aiders, what do you teach them?
I teach through the MHFA England umbrella, which I found to be one of the definite leading ones. We teach them about stigma, that it is still there. We allow them to go crazy on these two boards and write all the most horrid things you can think about what we can call people. And what we like to do with that one is then get them to look at them and go, right, well, if that's what we think, what do you think the person with that mental health problem is thinking of themselves? Yeah, oh, I'm crazy, I'm this, I'm that. Where actually it isn't at all.
Yeah.
It's a total normal feeling to be, especially in grief or something like that. This is normal to be feeling like this. We teach them about all different things, about early signs of depression, early signs of anxiety, how to deal with someone in a crisis situation of a panic attack.
Yeah.
So it's the prevention rather than the cure.
Yeah.
Therapists are there to treat.
Yeah.
Mental health first aiders are there to just help them right at the beginning, to be that ear, to give them the skills. And we do a lot on listening skills. And people are amazed at how little we are taught to listen. You go through school, reading, writing, maths, boom, boom, boom. When do we ever get taught how to listen?
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah. Well, we don't.
And
I think
that's why we suck at it, because we like to talk about our own problems.
Yeah. How often do you have a conversation with somebody where you might be listening, but as you're listening, you're already forming your next question or where are you going to go with this?
Yeah. And you're not actually taking on what they're saying to you.
You're not really digesting it.
No. And then you have those lovely, wonderful people that will always be able to spin it back onto themselves.
Yeah.
So then it's about my problem.
Oh, that happened
now
to me as well.
It's...
Thanks.
Oh, it
that
frustrates me. Yeah, it's like, great. All right, I'll go now.
Have you heard of Brené Brown? She's brilliant. She studied shame and vulnerability for about 15 years, and she's got a couple of TED Talks. She did an interview with Oprah, and she talked about how she could have different conversations with different friends and how they would respond. It is so powerful, because you look at every response that she goes through and you go, oh, yeah. Oh, I've got a friend that does that.
Yeah.
And I've got a friend that does that. And I've got a friend that does that. Then I've got this really, really cool friend that just listens to me, just hears me, understands it. So if you're out there and you're trying to form a response, don't. Just hear them. Just listen to them.
Yeah, shut your inner dialogue off.
Yeah.
And just listen. It's like, how often, and the most acceptable one idea is, if someone tells you that they've just lost a loved one, we often say, I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
We will verbalise, I don't know what to say, and that can be enough. That's, I don't want you to say anything.
Yeah.
You know, and the difference as well is being able to empathise with people.
Yeah.
We can't sympathise, and people get those very confused. you can only sympathise if you've been in that exact position, which no one will ever have been in the same. Whereas we can empathise, and just saying things like, that must be really hard for you at the moment.
Yeah.
That's giving that person that, well, actually, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Validating that as a problem. Whereas to me, that might not cause me any stress at all. And I don't want to be saying that to you. If you've opened up to me, I'll say, oh my God, you know, how's that stressing you out? You should see stress. My life is this. Whereas in fact, that must be really hard for you dealing with that at the moment. Is so powerful, and it makes it validated.
Completely. I just think it's nice to ask people, is just to let you know that I'm here.
Yeah.
Let me know if there's anything I can do. And they may not have anything in that moment, but you're just letting them know that they're there. Somehow. Yeah. Grief's the funny one, because people tend to go into silence, whereas I don't want them to go into silence. I want them to say, no, don't go silent. Mm. Because then what happens is they go, well, nobody's checked in on me. Nobody's asked me. But then people go, oh, I didn't know what to say. And I'm like, well, so just say, I'm here for you if you need me.
Yeah.
That's enough.
There and then might not be the time that they want to speak. Because as we know, with the grief process, everyone deals with things differently. Yeah. They might want you in a week, a month. But just saying to somebody, I'm here when you need me, can be...
Is enough.
Enough. Yeah. Someone's noticed me that day.
It's good enough. Phrase that we use in therapy a lot.
Yeah.
Sam, we have come to the end of our recording. Thank you so much. Is there anything that you want to leave the listener with?
Don't be afraid to talk to people.
Yeah.
About your own mental health, or ask them about their own. There are plenty of training courses, workshops, talks out there online, face to face, that you can go to. I would encourage anyone on September the 10th to take part in the Suicide Prevention Day in some way.
Yeah.
Lincoln have got its first conference going on, and other places will have it as well.
Brilliant.
But it's okay not to be okay.
Perfect.
Is the main thing.
I love that, because it really is. And at some point, you know, that figure 1 in 4 drives me insane, that, because that cannot be correct. For me, everybody at some point goes through some sort of crisis. Not 1 in 4.
No, everybody.
I'm going to leave it there. Remember that our podcasts are available from radionewark.co.uk, iOS and Android apps. The contact info is 01636 678 033, or you can email studio@radionewark.co.uk. The podcasts will also appear on Guthrie Therapy's Facebook page. If you have any questions, please message me via Facebook. We love your listener questions, so please keep them coming in. Till next time, as always, please be really, really kind to yourself first. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.